Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com.
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classical Dungeons and Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Welcome back to the Save or Die Podcast, adventure number 10. We've made double digits. That's right, number 10. Well, I guess you could say we've made double digits a while ago because we've had so many other shows, just named something else, but officially, we are on adventure number 10. I am one of your hosts, DM Vince, along as usual, and back by popular demand, DM Liz. Liz, how are we?
Oh, doing fine. Although I will have to warn people, I'm going to be gone again next weekend. But that's okay. Y'all can have another Man Cave episode without me.
That's right. And I'll just go, hello, I'm Liz, just to make sure.
Yeah, it'll be like I'm never left.
Yeah. And Mike is gracefully sitting in the background waiting to speak up.
Gracefully? Yes. I just wouldn't gracefully sit.
You lounge.
Yes.
With recline.
With a cup of tea by the fire.
Ah, yes, that's me. Well, except no fire.
Yes. Well,
that is exactly me.
We could light a fire near you, so.
That's okay.
And joining us this week by popular demand of four people... is
I assume people.
Yeah, but four people, not four people, as in four, the number four, is DM Glenn.
What? Hi.
Who was sleeping.
Yay.
Glad to be here.
Yes, Glenn will be joining us every once in a while when he's free from doing his very busy schedule of audio dramas.
And stage show.
And, yes, that's right, you're involved in the stage, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of like taking up 3/4 of my time, but you get the other quarter, so.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo. Yeah.
And, and Crispy will be back eventually one other time or two, because a lot of people liked hearing his perspective, but he has to work, little boy, and he can't join us.
Yeah, works at the borders. Anyway.
He's going to kill you now.
At least he works. Anyway.
Ooh, I work. Be quiet.
But anyway. I don't. That's the whole problem.
And
are you a real gamer if you work?
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
We both work.
You've got to be able to afford the books.
Yeah. Only people who don't work and game, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that. Never mind.
And I want to apologize to the people for last week and this week, too, because I've been trying to get over a cold for the last couple of weeks. That's why you get this cough off mic every once in a while.
Mike's coughing. Mike, you okay?
Like this.
Oh, that kind of Mike.
Yeah, that kind of Mike.
All right, let's head down into the cauldron room and...
Hey, Vince, what? Dumb looks good on me. It doesn't look good on you.
Anyway, before I knock you down the stairs, let's go.
The fumes will help your cold,
yeah,
Glenn.
Come over here near the cauldron pot, Glenn. Take a whiff of this.
Lean way over.
You put your underwear in here, did you?
Oh, no, gosh. that was Mike's cat.
Oh, okay. Hi there, little kitty. Don't flush.
Okay. Wow.
You know, I think it's helping her.
Probably. I don't know.
Certainly couldn't hurt.
So what have we all done?
Wow, out of Vince.
Yeah, wow. What have we all done that's classical lately? We'll start with Glenn since he won't shut up for 5 minutes.
I guess I'm channeling somebody else, I guess.
Ooh.
Not a whole heck of a lot. I've been researching, which later on in the show we're going to cover, Tegel Manor.
Yeah.
And a few other Judges Guild goodies, namely the Field Book for Encounters, which is probably the most whacked out Judges Guild supplement I have seen so far.
I don't know. There have been a lot of whacked out Judges Guild supplements.
Yeah,
really. For Judges Guild, that's saying something.
Yeah, it is. It was apparently it was done by this other group, Four Judges Guild, and while there's some good monsters, there's some totally weird, even for D&D standards, monsters. Along with what looks like some kind of role-playing system, but dang if I could figure out what it is. We'll cover it in a later episode, but that night for AD&D, I got a copy of White Plume Mountain for $4. Yay!
Yay. So, Mike, what have you been doing?
Well, Glenn emailed me about Field Guide for Encounters, and so I decided, maybe I should start looking at it, too. Mm-hmm. So I've been looking at Volume 1 of it, and he's right. You know, just the supposed character generation system, I'm going, what? Hmm. What is... I can't decide if they were just trying to create the shell of a role-playing game to rationalize a supplement, or, as Glenn said, it's really just somebody's house rules trying to get published as a supplement.
Yeah, I think they were trying to go for another Arduin or something.
Yeah, it does kind of have that feel, only Arduin was a bit more coherent.
Yeah. Any chart that you can... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Of course, I'm not all the way through it yet, so maybe it improves as I get on in the book.
You can hope.
Yeah, well.
Okay.
Any game that uses a D10,000 chart, I kind of wonder about.
Jeez. Mm. Liz?
Well, Mike has not shared this supplement with me, so I haven't looked at it. But I have been going over Tegel Manor for the podcast today, and also flipping through the Holmes Blue Book, looking at various undead critters and other good things. So that's been my classic D&D experience for the week.
Cool. I have actually been taking a look at the Ravenloft campaign guide from 2nd edition and figuring out ways to import it into Classic for this weekend's adventure. That I'm going to run. Ooh. I want to run a Ravenlofty type classic D&D type game.
Wow.
Cool.
So it's not that easy. I'm trying to figure it out. It's kind of a big transition between 2nd edition and classic. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what would you say is causing you the most problem?
That I don't like 2nd edition. I think that's the biggest problem there.
Yeah.
I'm not finding it like the old comfortable pair of shoes that Glenn hides in his closet all the time.
Yeah.
You take it and leave them in the closet.
Yeah. Other than that, it's all right. I mean, you know, I like the atmosphere mostly of the game, so.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What, Glenn?
Well, no, it's an uphill climb, but it'll be worth it.
Definitely. And what's this new segment you were talking about, Mike, before the show started that we were confused about?
Oh, well, it's not a segment. It's just something that's been going around the net, and I thought it'd be kind of fun for us to do. It's called 15 Games and 15 Minutes Mean. And basically, you're supposed to write down 15 games that come off the top of your head, not necessarily in order of favorite or anything, just as they come to mind. And when you get the list, or as many as you can, it kind of gives a reflection of the type of gamer you are, or what type of gaming has had the most influence on you in your life.
Wow.
Why don't you start us off, and so let's go.
Oh. Well, number one, D&D. I didn't figure a way. It was really reasonable to split it up into the various incarnations. 2, GDW's Traveler.
Mm-hmm.
Hero Champions. Mm-hmm. Though I would probably specify 2, versions, editions, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. I've never really played 4th or beyond much. Call of Cthulhu. SPI's Dawn of the Dead board game. TSR's Vampire, the mini game that they put out as a little board game.
Oh, okay.
Vampire the Masquerade.
Yay.
Arkham Horror, another board game based on Call of Cthulhu. Eden Studios' All Flesh Must Be Eaten, zombie survival horror game. Castles and Crusades by Troll Lord. Avalon Hill's Third Reich. Diplomacy, also by Avalon Hill, another board game. TSR's board game, a fantasy board game, Divine Right. Boot Hill. And Risk.
And what is that supposed to tell us about you?
I don't know. You tell me.
I don't know. Let's hear what Liz has.
I've played too many games.
Maybe, I don't know. Let's try one more time. Liz, what do you got?
Okay. Well, I also have D&D. Mm-hmm. Can I list games that haven't actually been published yet?
I guess.
Sure, why not?
I mean, you played them.
Okay. So, after that would be Victorious, which I've been doing a lot of playtesting for Mike, and theoretically it will be published sometime in our lifetimes.
In the not-too-distant future.
Champions, yeah. And again, like Mike, 1st through 3rd edition, Carcassonne, Gother Than Thou, which is a hilarious card game.
Sounds fun. Yeah.
Go for Broke, Vampire the Masquerade, Traveler, Call of Cthulhu, the old Chaosium, not the D20 version, mm-hmm. Castles and Crusades, Monopoly, Urban Dead, that's an online text-based MMORPG. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely free, which is why I play it, because if you had to pay for it, I wouldn't go anywhere near it. Civilization, Arkham Horror, and the Dungeon Board Game.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard about that in years. Mm. Forgot all about that one.
Yeah. I should have probably put that instead of Risk, but it didn't come to mind, so...
Yeah, I'm surprised with all the references you guys have, you didn't say the Doctor Who game.
Well, I have never actually played the Doctor Who RPG game. So, we own the rules and everything, but I've never played it, so I didn't really feel like I could put it on my list.
Okay. Me either.
No comment.
Okay, so...
I mean, I've run Doctor Who... using the Traveler rules system, but never actually the FOSSA rules system.
Well, that's interesting. Hmm. I didn't know you could do that. Well, anyway.
Glenn, what's your list?
Okay, I managed to squeeze out about 11 or so. Champions, number one. Again, 1st through 3rd, because some reason I stopped playing before 4th, but I looked through the book and it's like, they're all the same. AD&D, 1st through 3.5. Tune. Call of Cthulhu. Call of Cthulhu, both incarnations, Dream Park, Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, Star Wars D6, Robo Rally, Flux, Grave Robbers from Outer Space, and Junta.
Junta!
Now, what does that tell you about me? Nothing.
No, not really. So, I'll go over my list and then...
Yeah. I want to hear this.
D&D. Obviously, I'll just do like Mike did, to say D&D, because all incarnations, whatever, except for 4th edition. Oh, I said the name that shall not be named. I'm going to die now. Marvel RPG, Star Trek FOSSA, Star Wars D6, Star Wars Saga, Pathfinder, Vampire the Masquerade 2nd edition, Vampire the Requiem, Werewolf, The Apocalypse, Catan, which is a board game, Murder City, another board game, Risk, City of Villains, which is a computer
City
game.
City of Heroes.
I didn't really like City of Heroes. I like Villains better. And okay. Cult, the RPG. Buffy the Vampire role-playing game. War, and then Call of Cthulhu, the original.
That tells us something about you, I think.
Yeah, sci-fi and horror, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact that you like City of Villains better than City of Heroes.
Yeah. And angsty goth all over the place.
Evil.
Mm. Well, I guess you can tell something from my list, unlike everyone else's list. We couldn't figure it out.
Well, I don't know. The fact that I said tune might give you a clue.
Very high up there, yeah. And yeah. most of my games are like 30 years out of print, so yeah, I'm old. Sure.
The only one I may have left off is like Ghostbusters.
Oh, I love Ghostbusters too.
Yeah, that's fun.
I like playing the original one, not GBI International, whatever that was, that other one.
Oh, the sequel?
Yeah, whatever that sequel one was.
It turned out a second movie. Let's turn out a second game. Okay.
Sure. And let's wait for the third movie, which is supposedly coming out in the next yada yada years, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Chinese Democracy album.
Oh.
Yeah. Son of Ghostbusters or something like that.
Let's not get into Ghostbusters. There's a podcast for that, and people can go listen to that. Write in, tell us what you think about our lists, or write in your 15 games and tell us, you know, let us see what you do. Write in the forums, vote in Mike's poll that he put up in the Dragon's Foot forum, see who's who agrees with him if Ariel's hot or not.
I still can't believe overwhelmingly in my favor.
Yeah, I still can't believe that.
A doll's a doll, like I said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike has problems, apparently. But I don't have to deal with that. Only Liz does, so...
Yes, I have a hard life ahead of me.
Oh, I will not veer into that area. Okay.
Let's head into Game On. So Game On this week.
Oh, we made it. Good.
Yeah, okay. We did. Yeah. We went back up the stairs. Don't worry, Glenn.
Okay.
Relax. Shh, breathe, okay. breathe.
Okay.
Although I think there was a pixie down in the cauldron room for a little while there.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm an overweight gamer. You can't make me do all that exercise.
Well, all right. Well, we'll run you up and down the stairs a few more times. You'll get fit. Don't worry about it.
Okay, fine.
So we're going to talk a little bit about clerics. Clerics versus undead.
Okay.
What should they have this ability? Should they not have this ability?
Are we talking turning here?
I believe so.
Yeah.
If they're good, yes. If they're evil, they should control them.
Well, that's an interesting point of view, because strictly speaking, in original D&D, Brown Book, anti-clerics did not have the ability to do anything to undead.
Not even destroy them?
No.
Okay, what is this anti-cleric you speak of, sir? That's something new to me.
It was something... It's kind of like saying evil cleric, only it was a bit more restrictive than that. If you were an evil, or as in Brown Book, chaotic cleric, all the versions of the cleric spells you had were reversed.
Ah, okay.
Including Finger of Death. And it was a bit more stratified. I mean, you know, good clerics could not get the evil spells and vice versa. So, for instance, a good cleric could never get cause light wounds, but conversely, an anti-cleric could never get cure light wounds, and so on and so forth. Another interesting rule that I had not generally been aware of is that in Brown Book, neutral clerics could only go to 6th level.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah, only lawful or chaotics could go higher than 6th level.
Huh.
No real explanation, so I guess it's, I don't know if it's a matter of cosmology or...
Kind of limits your healing power there.
Yeah, yeah. Although I suppose maybe it's a compensation, since neutral clerics can use either versions of the spell.
Interesting, because I kind of make the clerics do one way or the other when they become neutral. Either they pick the good side or the evil side.
Yeah.
And good clerics... Or lawful, I should say, only can use the lawful spells, and the chaotic can only use the chaotic spells. There's no vice versa. They can't switch and go in between. It'd be going against their religion and gods, I would say.
Yeah. You do not go against your god.
No. That's how I handle it. At least that's my translation of what rules should be. I mean, I don't know what you guys do. Liz, what would you do?
Well... I suppose, as far as me personally, just totally disregarding whatever the rules would say, just to try to keep things simple, I would probably let all clerics have either the ability to turn undead or to control them. If I tried to get really fancy and just say that certain clerics, depending on what god they worshipped, had the ability to turn undead, then I'd probably see all of my players choosing those gods so that they would have the ability to turn undead in adventures. And it wouldn't really, I guess, do anything for my campaign world as far as the players were concerned. I will say that in the Holmes book, while they don't really talk about evil clerics in detail, it's really implied that only good clerics can turn undead, and they don't say whatsoever whether the evil clerics can control them or do anything.
Mm-hmm.
They do say that spells for evil clerics differ from those of good clerics, and there's a list of which spells are reversed for the evil ones. And again, they don't say that an evil cleric cannot cast Cure Light Wounds, but it's very much implied that they can only do the cause.
Now, I don't know Holmes that well, so correct me if I'm wrong. Do they have the nine axis alignments in there?
Yes,
no,
they do.
Five.
I was going to say, they have more than just evil or...
Yeah.
Yeah, they have more than just law, chaotic, neutral.
Right.
Yeah, they have lawful good, lawful evil, chaotic good, chaotic evil, and neutral.
Okay, because it sounds like this is like a carryover from the brown box, where didn't you just have like good, neutral, and evil?
Lawful, neutral, and chaotic.
But,
yeah, lawful was generally assumed to be good, chaotic just assumed to be evil.
Yeah, okay. So to me, it just seems like a carryover from that, when they just had the three alignments.
I've always kind of looked at the Holmes rules as sort of a bridging between the Brown Book rules and what would eventually be the 1E AD&D rules.
Sounds like a good bridge gap. Yep.
Yeah, so I'm half right. So.
So, Mike, what would you do?
Well, that's kind of a dubious question, because I don't allow people to run evils in my games anyway.
But if you did.
But if I did.
My kind of DM. Go ahead.
I don't know. I do kind of like the idea of evil clerics being able to dominate undead. I mean, I know that that's something that really just kind of popped up in AD&D, but it's cool. I mean, what's the evil high priest without his, you know, horde of undead minions, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would allow them to, and you know, if you're controlling undead, isn't that turning them in a way? Because if you control them and you tell them to go away, they go away.
That's true.
So it's effectively a turn.
Yeah, it's just turning is just like one command. This is like, okay, dance a jig.
Yeah.
Pat your head and rub your tummy, you know, that kind of thing. Anything.
Get a zombie chorus line, you know.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Nice. Anyway. So, Glenn, what would you do?
What would I do? Hmm. Oh, I'd blow them all up. No.
Okay.
Well, pretty much, it's like I said, it's good clerics turn them, bad clerics control them. And evil clerics got the advantage, of course, because they can make them do anything they want. But that's the price you pay for being good. And pretty much I'd leave it at that. Besides, like Mike, I don't allow evil people to play evil either. So it's kind of a moot point.
I go as
an interesting... What? Sorry.
I was going to say, I go as far as lawful evil, and that's about it.
Really?
Yeah, I'll allow lawful evil in the campaign.
I draw the line at Nazis.
That's because they're copyright TSR. No.
They probably are.
Probably. Mm-hmm. Somebody holds that copyright, if not Spielberg. Anyway, that's pretty much where I lie. You know, no evil in my campaign, so everybody turn, nobody control.
I think it would be interesting if, say, an evil cleric, when they did their role to attempt to control an undead, have as a given, if they fail, that undead immediately tries to attack them.
I thought that's what happened. Isn't that what happened? Well, no, that's kind of... but that would be a good house rule.
Yeah.
Because it's not... You're sort of assuming, well, you're an evil cleric. Undead are naturally going to do what you want anyway because you're of like mind. But not necessarily.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
that's
it's like trying to control a demon or bind him when you first summon him. You know, you better get him down now or he's going to just go after you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty good difference. Idea. Have the undead go straight for the evil cleric to try to control him and attack him unmercifully, yeah.
Yeah, maybe even give him bonuses.
Yeah. The good guy, hey, here's a baseball bat. Thank you. Okay.
Yeah. Now, there's something that I noticed, I don't know if Holmes has it, but I know the Mulvey and the Menser, there's a lack of like specific gods. Like, you know how the later editions had lists of gods?
Yeah, you mean like first edition had all these...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had
and
a lack of gods.
Crown Book had gods, demigods, and heroes.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Did Holmes have anything like that, Liz?
Not that I recall. It was very, very vague.
Vague. Well, that's why they had like Judges Guild. That's what their reason for being is, trying to bridge, you know, fill the gaps of things like that. You know, it's like they had the unknown gods and they had all these other, like, every book you'd open up says, oh, these guys follow this god. Okay, I guess I can use that. Because I don't have anything else.
I just remember a lot of people using either, like, gods from the Norse tradition or looking into the Greek tradition, or some people going as far as using, for the evil clerics, the demons as their gods. So just using whatever they knew at the time. I was wondering why they left that out.
Hmm. Well, I know in the book that John Eric Holmes wrote, the novel Maze of Peril, his clerics in there were really kind of just, you know, faux Catholic priests or something, you know, just kind of, it was always kind of a faux Christianity without any real heavy duty religion on it.
No.
And that's the good clerics, of course. The evil ones were worshiping a Cthulhoid type god. Dagon, I think it was called.
Which I
really like too, is having my evil character or evil NPCs clerics worshiping Cthulhoid monstrosities, because they're so much fun.
That's one thing nice thing about Lovecraft, is like you can make up your own. Okay, it's got tentacles and it flies and we worship it.
And shake up a Scrabble board to come up with the name, you know?
Yeah. Pretty much. Oh, grab the pieces out of the bag. Okay, it's Lockfordo. Lockfordo. What a name.
Yeah. And speaking about turning, how do you guys play the rule for turning? Do you have them use their holy symbol? Can they just wave their hand, say a magic word? Do they sit down and meditate or throw powder in the air? What would you guys do for that as far as...
Holy symbol.
Yeah, I can hang with that, because the DMs I've gamed with, played with, basically you have your holy symbol and you better believe in it. I mean, you know, like the fighter can't grab your holy symbol if you get knocked down. If he doesn't believe in your god or his god or something like that, it ain't gonna work.
No, yeah, of course.
Yeah, but he really stressed, you better, and I thought that was a good idea, you better believe in your religion, even if it's, you know, my holy symbol is two sticks and they represent this guy. Okay, fine, you believe in it. It, you know, the vampire's turned.
Which, by the way, makes a great inroad to let a cleric know that he's torqued off his god.
Yeah. Why is he still coming at me? Yeah.
Yeah, why don't I get a roll? Because your god's PO'd at you. Aha! Well, that's...
Time to run!
But yeah, I would say not only brandishing the holy symbol, I would say unless you've destroyed them, it's something you have to keep doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a flash and then, okay, we can go do something else. It's no, the cleric has to keep brandishing the holy symbol at the undead to keep them at bay.
Yeah, you're right.
I do it depending on the type of cleric it is. Say it's a cleric of Thor.
Uh-huh.
I would sit down with them and try to see if they want to use a holy symbol or they want to use the whole, well, Thor is a battle cleric. Maybe he would use his hammer as his holy symbol. Maybe he'd have to turn it upside down.
See an argument for that.
Hold it upside down.
Yeah, that's possible too.
And hold it out as his holy symbol.
But then again, you can just say your weapon is your holy symbol. So,
Yeah. You could say that.
I hate to bring in a movie reference here, but that reminds me of in the movie Highlander, during the battle with the Frasers between the two Scottish clans, and the priest was there holding the big cross, and then he took the top of the cross and yanked it up, and it turns out the lower half of the cross was a scabbard for a dagger. He pulls it out and cuts this guy's throat, and then does the little cross over him.
Always nice to have a backup.
Yeah, well. Or so, like, yeah, I don't see why a holy symbol couldn't be a weapon as well.
Why not? You can use a weapon as the holy symbol. They did it in Boondock Saints. Why not?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think the main point is you need to have something to act as the focus for your belief and for the power of the god that you are worshiping.
Right.
Well, here's another question. There are occasionally given price lists in the various classic versions of D&D, and there's usually things like wooden holy symbol, silver or gold holy symbol, da-da-da. Do you give any advantages depending on the type of holy symbol?
I'd say no, except for, like, in certain special, like a silver holy symbol, it's gonna, you hit a werewolf with it, he's gonna get hurt.
Right, but that's a game mechanic. But, I mean, as far
yeah,
as...
Yeah, but I'm saying that that's about the only thing I can think of offhand. Mm. I mean, you know, take the... Say it's a wooden cross, a wooden holy symbol. Just make sure the end's sharpened as a point so you can use it as a stake if you need to.
Mm. No, I don't give any bonuses for that.
I wouldn't give bonuses either. I think, like has already been mentioned, a lot of undead critters are... They don't care for silver as it is, so you kind of have that bonus already just having the symbol made of silver to begin with, in addition to using it as your focus for turning.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to make sure, I'd have it, like, I don't know, silver covered with garlic.
Okay.
Cover all my bases right there.
Silver covered with garlic, make sure it's a steak as well. We'll go for that. Yeah.
Yeah,
cover the front with garlic, the back with wolf's bane, so you can flip
there
it.
There you go. Yeah.
Wow.
You go.
The ultimate battle cleric.
Yeah.
All
from
right.
Popeil. From Popeil.
I think we've beaten this to the ground. Yeah. So tell us what you think and write us in. And Mike, what's that email address?
SaveOrDiePodcast@gmail.com.
And the more letters you write in, the more side adventures we'll have. So keep writing those letters in, because we love doing side adventures. Right, Glenn?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll head over to Random Encounters.
We take what we want and leave the rest. Just like your salad bar.
Nothing up my sleeve. Presto!
We'll come up no more.
What? Huh? What'll come out no more?
Random Encounters.
Random Encounters. What do we have this week? And don't say kobolds. Liz, what do we have?
We are covering the undead. And if you had a zombie kobold, you could have a kobold.
Are there zombie kobolds?
There could
be. A zobald.
I don't see why you couldn't have one. I would have one.
So, really quickly, I'm going to go around the table. First thing you think of when you think of undead, what do you think of, Liz?
Skeletons.
Glenn.
Vampires.
Mike.
Zombies.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Mike on zombies, too. Yep. Anytime I hear undead, automatically zombies come to mind.
Zombies.
I don't get all the love for zombies lately. I just...
Zombies rock.
Yeah.
Especially flesh-eating zombies.
I kind of like the 28 Days Later zombies.
The infected?
The infected.
They're not really zombies, though. They're just infected people.
Well, they're still zombies.
Well, no, they're alive.
Not really.
They're living, they're infected, you can kill them. You shoot them in the heart, they die, don't they?
Yeah, no.
Well, you can destroy zombies, too. It just takes a little longer, and you chop
them
more parts.
Well, no, you gotta get the brain, and you can, like, chop half of a zombie off, and it'll keep crawling toward you.
Well,
so, in the classic D&D, where there's no infected, well, there could be infected zombies with viruses, I don't know, maybe. But traditionally, we have the skeleton, we have the zombie, we have the white, what else do we have?
Vampire.
Spectre.
Does it mummies fall under that too?
Yep.
Yeah.
Ghouls.
Vampire.
Yeah, vampire. Now, I vote for mummies. I think they rock.
Do they even have a vampire in?
Oh yeah.
The Mensur Mulvae.
Oh, Mensur Mulvae. I don't know.
Because I'm looking through it right now. Because that just sparked up a whole thing. If there's a vampire, and I don't see one. Was there a vampire in
Mulvae? Maybe in the expert book.
In Mulvae, Liz? I mean, not in Holmes. Sorry, Holmes.
vampires are in Holmes.
And
I'm pretty sure. Let me look up my Mensur here. And
yeah, I only have the basic Mulvae book right in front of me.
Could be in the book expert.
It probably is.
Yeah, I'll bet it is. Let me grab it real quick.
Vampires are pretty oomphy for your basic first or third level characters, but like with the dragons, the Holmes book does not seem to care whether or not a monster may be a little bit too powerful for a beginning adventurer, because we've got all kinds of stuff that you're going, man... That would have your character for lunch in a second.
Tell me about it, jeez.
And yet, it teaches that very important skill, running away.
Yeah, if you have a chance. Mm-hmm. It's like vampires drain 2 life energy levels when they hit an opponent. And if you're first level and you're trying to get out and the vampire hits you, you're dead.
Yeah.
You turn into a one-hit mook.
That's the one thing I hate about the later editions. It's just like every time you see a monster that you know is probably too powerful for you, should be running. You shouldn't be just going, ha-ha, with your sword running at it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
At some adventures I've seen where, you know, it's a low-level adventure, say, and there's, say, a ghost rumored to be in this tower outside. Yeah, everybody goes, well, you know, this is a first to third level module. Let's go check it out, because obviously it can't really be a ghost. There's got to be something that's going on.
Yeah,
because... Let's see who it really is.
Yeah, they Scooby-Doo it, and no, it could very well be a ghost.
Why do they do that?
At least in old school.
Well, why do they do that in later editions? Because everybody knows that in later editions, we'll say post-2000 editions... that encounters were made for the levels of the adventurers, so they don't need to worry about fear and being hurt too much.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's not fair.
Yeah.
Okay, Mensur Expert set, page 57, Vampire.
Okay.
All right, good, it's in there, okay.
So they at least wait till your fourth level to hit you with that. So
that's
you can
sporting
take two
them.
Hits. You can take two hits from the vampire instead of one.
And you got that one spell ready?
So, I don't know. We had too many... There's too much undead to focus on, so...
7 to 9 hit dice,
well,
Mensur.
Something that I heard on RPG Circus, another great podcast, that we could talk about as well is, what do you do with undead to make them different?
Talk.
You know, instead of the standard. Well, like Liz was saying, zombie kobolds.
Make them talk.
Yeah.
Talking zombies?
Eat eyes.
Why not? It worked in Gremlins.
Yeah, well, just cast a magic mouth on them and, you know.
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, there's no reason why they can't talk.
Dress them up like Michael Jackson.
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh my
God. No, any day now, we're waiting for that. Yeah. You know, come on, Mike. We know you want to come out.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you could do like Liz says. You can make like various creatures undead creatures.
Yeah.
That'd be
well, some other things. It's like, well, zombies are, you know, maybe too weak. Well, what about a zombie hill giant?
That could happen.
Yeah.
I mean, we know wares, you know, we can't, you know, the demi-humans can't be wares, so they could be undead.
Oh, yeah. You can have zombie elves, zombie dwarves.
How about a zombie doppelganger?
Oh.
you just
trumped me. I was going to say a zombie belay. But you just trumped me.
a zombie doppelganger that can doppelgang into any creature, pretty much.
But every creature he looks like is a zombie.
Yeah. But he can become whatever he wants. So, what do you think? Can you use it?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I would. But zombie giant sounds cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember seeing in one of the monster manuals, I think it was the second edition or something like that, they came up with a zombie beholder.
Yeah, I remember seeing that at one point.
Oh, that was nasty.
A zombie beholder.
Zombie beholders.
Yeah, he had like practically all the eyes were dead and everything, and oh god.
But when you're a zombie and you got that maw, that's
it still had all the powers of the beholder?
I don't think so. But it had like I can't even recall. I have to go dig it up. But it was pretty nasty. It had like double the hit dice and all that other crap. But just thinking about it. Anyway, now what we're saying, but zombie doppelganger.
Yeah.
Or maybe a vampire doppelganger, because you know you got to have the intellect to still use the doppelganger power.
Or it could be instinct.
Or a mummy.
Or a mummy.
Yeah.
I have all my undead be.
Smurfs.
Smurfs, yes.
Yeah.
Well, they're blue. That explains a lot.
Yeah. 10 hit points there, 10 hit points. These are easy to stomp out. 10 hit points there.
That's right. Yeah. No, I have them all be very vulnerable to silver, which, you know, with the whole holy symbol thing. And after I said that, I was thinking, well, technically, in Holmes, only about half of your undead are actually, you know, going to be affected more by silver. A lot of them don't really care about silver one way or the other, but I tended to always have all my undead be affected by silver in some way. So yeah, that's something weird that I do personally.
It's kind of like a little house rule. Yeah.
Yeah, that players wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
So if they have a silver weapon against like a zombie, it would do more damage than a regular weapon or something, you're saying?
Yeah.
That's a cool rule. I like that rule.
Yeah.
What about partially incorporate creatures like wraiths or specters?
So they're just partially incorporate?
Yeah. I mean, they're basically ghosts.
Yeah.
Would silver weapons be able to hit them?
Well, the wraiths are very similar to whites in Holmes. And in Holmes, silver weapons score normal damage on them as opposed to normal weapons, which don't hit. And the magic weapons do double damage. So, right. Yeah, I would treat the wraiths pretty much the same way. Normal weapons wouldn't do anything. Silver weapons would hit as a normal weapon, and your magic weapons would be kick-ass.
Yeah, this is where I get kind of... I mean, you start going wraiths, right, all the incorporeal stuff, kind of like they're all ghosts to me. They get getting confusing.
So what about throwing ghosts at players at lower levels? Think that's fair? Does it really matter?
Oh, yeah. That definitely. I mean, you know, to me, they're like the lower level of undead. So it'd start there.
You started a ghost.
Yeah.
Ghosts are pretty high level.
Yeah, ghosts
I'm doing this, not looking at the spreadsheet right now, but my ghosts are different. Okay.
Oh, so you revamp your ghosts to like a lower level for players to scare the heck out of them.
Right, exactly. First you scare them, then you attack them.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you could take your ghosts and make them one-hit dice creatures just enough to get a little spook into the game.
Yeah. And then when they start going up a level, you just start ramping them up.
Yeah, one thing I do in some of my campaigns is a particular undead cult uses skeletons as, you know, general enforcers and bodyguards, temple guards and stuff, but they soak the bones either in lead or bronze. So you basically have a skeleton but he's AC 2.
Nice.
Ooh.
He's slower, but he's AC 2. And, you know, suddenly he's not quite the pushover that he was.
Yeah.
Right. I saw there was a spell in Dragon later on, one of the other editions, that I just abused the heck out of. Because I was playing chaotic good necromancer. And it was a spell called Blast Bones, where you can make bones explode. And so that you could, like, take a zombie, subdue it. So, like, nails and other things into it, send it to your victims, and then just go, blast bones. Kaboom.
Like a suicide bomber or something.
Pretty much. A suicide zombie, yeah. Pretty much.
Cool. I like that. Interesting.
Yeah, I abused the heck out of that one.
I bet you did.
Candygram.
So what more can we say about the undead?
They're dead.
They're fun.
They are.
Because there's really, in a D&D context, there's no moral ambiguity there. Undead are evil. Kill them.
That's true. And I'm not going to get into draining levels, even though I want to, because that's kind of a... Save that for another time, because that's kind of a separate thing, because a lot of things drain levels.
So what about an undead with a soul?
What?
What about undead with a soul that has a purpose in life?
That's a cool jazz drummer? What?
I know what you're saying, but it's like, to me, it sounds like an oxymoron.
I assume you're talking like vampires or something with intellect.
Yeah, and something with intellect, like a vampire with a soul.
Well, then again, like, you know, the original Mummy, you might say had a soul, because he had a purpose. Trying to get his lover back.
Yeah.
How would you handle that?
Liches have souls.
Oh, but
if you're saying intellect equates souls, which I'm not really sure, because, you know, elves don't have souls, at least in Brown Book. You can only use reincarnation on them rather than regeneration.
Yeah, it goes the same way. It goes the same way with first edition. So, yeah. Oh,
technically, this is first edition, but what about that game that you ran, Mike, years and years ago, where you had that skeleton lord? That didn't he have his soul or something in a magic jar somewhere?
Yeah, but skeleton lords are neutral.
Yeah.
So there's no inherent evil to them. They can be, but it's a matter of what they're ordered to do and such.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing that up, Vince. I forgot about all that stuff. To me, that's kind of plot stuff.
Well, yeah, that's why it's just something to talk about.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I know that, but what I'm saying is, I mean, you wouldn't find that in the monster manual or something like that as a regular monster. I'm saying it's a special, as I call it.
Well, I think again that falls into DM manipulation of the game for the plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think it's a cool idea, and I think it also needs to be done very, very, very rarely, so that your players are going to. Their first thought is the undead is evil, and
okay. Well, what about Frankenstein?
And then they're taken by surprise when
they
come across the 1% undead that's maybe not necessarily evil but needs their help.
Exactly, flesh golem.
Yeah, but he's considered undead, wouldn't you think so, Frankenstein?
Yeah, Frankenstein's monster. He's lumped in there.
Yeah.
Well. From a D&D perspective, I would say he's a flesh golem.
Yeah, he is.
I guess
But still, I mean, that's, you know, if you're going to say undead can have souls, golems can have souls then, too, and under certain circumstances.
Yes.
Well, that's true. Kind of, literally, the story of Frankenstein's monster, he had a brain. He could think for himself, whereas in D&D, that's not the case with golems.
No, then I think it would fall under DM fiat. In the loosest terms. You know, it's like, okay, in this plot, this flesh golem has a soul, has a mind, and is part of the plot.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it'd be a special.
But again, I would agree with Liz that it should be done rare enough so that your players don't get used to it.
Exactly.
Or even just to where they're thinking. You know, the gut reaction should be this is something evil. Normally, you don't have to really nod your character, your players that way, because normally, kill it. Check his spleen for emeralds.
Torches and pitchforks. Yeah.
How about undead with personalities?
Oh yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Vampire with a personality is just like, you know, that's par for the course.
That's iconic, as well as liches.
Yeah.
I love liches with personalities. One of my favorite liches I've run in the past was like the main baddie from Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh, yeah.
He's really starting to piss me off.
I love
and
that
I'm
movie.
And I put on this earth to get it.
Jack Burton.
It's me. I drive a truck.
Fuck.
I have that on Blu-ray now.
Yeah.
Come on, Dave. Great movie. To me, that that movie, I actually, my original players group were champions. I said, "You got to watch this movie." They never watched it, and I said, "You know what this is?" He said, "What?" He says, "You know how everybody thinks that D&D and all these other games are like a movie that you star in? This is what really happens in the game." Jack Burton blows every single hit roll. He rolls, except at the end.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Anyway, I digress.
Okay. So, undead, tell us what you do, tell us what you think, and we'll move on.
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position.
They're the Cheetos!
They're right next to you.
Well, all you do is we play the characters we talked about earlier, and we run around and stuff.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
Use your lightning bolt.
Victory is yours.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Dungeons & Dragons games. Products of your imagination.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
Products of your imagination. Which, we love the new bumper, Glenn. Thank you.
Oh, thank
yes,
you.
Yes, that
you.
Is hilarious.
Thank you.
It's what happens when darkness. You ask her.
See what happens when you ask nice?
Yeah. So, the thing we're reviewing this week, since we really didn't have anything else to review, was, and Mike decided that since it's a Halloweenish type episode, and falling with the theme of undead and turning and clerics, we have Tegel Manor.
Tegel was actually suggested to us by one of our loyal listeners.
Was it?
Over at Dragon's Foot, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, who was it so we can give him proper recognition? And everybody goes blank.
I don't remember. I just remember that it was suggested, and we were going, yeah, that's a good idea.
And you know who you are, so thank you.
Yes, thank you.
You know who you are, so please write in and say, it was me, and then watch everybody writes in and said, it's me. But
the next show we'll go, who?
Yeah. Judges Guild. They were the ones who designed this?
Well,
yes.
I got the Bill Owen here. Originally, it was published in 1977 by Bill Owen and Bob Bledsoe. Second edition came out in 1980, and Game Science reissued it in 1989 with improvements. And I think
changes.
It's gone on to what? Yeah, changes.
Changes. Some were improvements. I will agree, but.
All right.
First thing I like about this when I look at it is that it was only $4.50, which I wish some of these things still were $4.50.
Yeah.
You cannot get Tegel Manor now for $4.50.
No.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
I love the map on the front cover along with the picture of the actual place.
Yeah.
Really looks
that
cool.
That is cool.
That's what I love about some of the Judges Guild stuff. It looks really good like that.
See, Mike has an original edition. I have the Game Science reissue. And I'm looking at the front page. It says, based on the original Judges Guild edition by Bob Bledsoe, revised and expanded by Niles Erickson, maps by Judges Guild. Then it says, Rat Holes by Bill Owen. Thank you, Bill, for the rat holes. What would we do without the rat holes?
So, someone want to give us a rundown, a real quick overview of what this whole module is about?
Sure. To me, this module is the haunted mansion of D&D.
Okay.
Pretty much. It is so... I mean, there are others like, you know, like you think of Tomb of Horror. Well, Tomb of Horror is like more like kill the players.
It is.
But no, this is kill their like, characters.
Kill the character. I know. Well, there's always that thought, you know.
Don't kill the players.
You're right.
It's so hard to get another group.
That's true. That's true. They don't grow in trees. but this one is like maybe kill the players, but yank their chains some, or just like do some bizarre stuff. They're just going to go, what the heck was that? This thing is totally packed with stuff like that. Mike, your impressions.
Well, the story hook, quote unquote, behind it is you've got the Rupert Rump?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Rump
family. I think
family.
It is. The great clan Rump family who have owned Tegel Manor for all these years is trying to hire adventurers to come in and help him clean out his house.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes he'll just sell you the place, depending on, you know, what the DM wants to do. And
yeah,
it is packed to the gills with weirdness.
From what I understand, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And it is not really level balanced.
No, not at all.
I mean, generally, the lower stuff is near the front of the house, but that's not uniform. You can find anything most anywhere, and you have to be careful. It is legal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Liz.
I was going to say, and if you don't enter via the front door, you could be in big trouble.
Were you the one who went through the back?
Yes!
Well, let's go clear out the tower first. And who's in the tower?
They have the centipedes waiting for you.
You know, they're starting with around third and fourth level characters. Uh-huh. The tower is where the 20th level lich is.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
Don't do that.
Now, we thought the tower would be easier because it was smaller than the big house. Foray into the big mansion from.
Uh-huh.
No, don't do that.
I thought it was a good resting spot.
Well, you know, this isn't just a killer dungeon, okay? It's a what-the-hell dungeon, but it's also got some interesting role-playing opportunities in here. If you want to, you know, stop swinging the sword long enough to actually maybe interact with some of these characters. First of all, it's got this big hall with like 100 pictures, each of which can do something to you, good or bad.
Yeah,
and that's the emphasis, good or bad. Because there's weird stuff in there that if you do play your cards right, will really help you.
It's like a hall of many things instead of a deck of many things.
Yeah.
And some of these people are still wandering around the house, either actual or maybe undead.
Wow.
But I found some, like, just here's one room and one here. It's the kitchen.
Okay.
Had a tornado struck within this room, the devastation could not be more complete. Amid a cloying reek that mixes potent spices and rancid odors, one finds overturned work tables, barrels, smashed crockery, and other debris. Amidst the stench, decay, and disorder, phantom chefs fuss over a pot simmering in the low fire, all the while engaged in a furious, if silent, argument at some point of preparation. Turning upon the party members, their animated gesticulation clearly indicated a desire for the party to step forward to help settle the debate by sampling the mixture. Any soul brave enough to do so will find himself oddly reflected, affected by the soup, though able to vouch for its excellent taste. The odd effect is a 1d10. 1 increases height, 1 foot. 2 plus 1 strength, 3 plus 1 dex, 4 plus 1 con, 5 plus 1 int, 6 plus 1 charisma, 7 minus 1 charisma, and 8 minus 1 to the highest attribute, 9, 2 to the highest attribute, and number 10, hair begins growing at 1 foot per minute for d20 minutes.
Yeah.
The chefs now satisfied disappear, the fire dies, rendering the soup no longer effective. Now that's a great role-playing opportunity right there.
It's like Alice in Wonderland, you know.
Yeah.
Eat me, drink me, and who knows what's going to happen to you.
Oh, and boy. It's loaded with that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a playroom with like killer teddy bears in there. A library where stuff just starts flying. There's this one room it has in there. They have a big mural of a battle that's actually, it looks like it's alive. And every fourth turn, an arrow shoots out of it, and there's all these arrows stuck on the opposite wall.
Yeah.
You know, a DM could have a field day with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Though I will say, the section that Glenn was reading was from the rewrite that was done in 89.
Okay, and my bad.
Yeah, well, no, not bad at all. I just wanted to make sure people knew that on average, the original did not go into that much detail in each room. A lot of the rooms, it would just give a sentence or two and the stats of anything that's in there, leaving it to the DM to cook up all the details with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Like, there was a room which appears in both of the versions. There's a whole bunch of zombies, I think, in kind of a schoolroom situation.
Yeah.
Being instructed on how to throttle someone by a light. In the Judges Guild, it's just like a one sentence. You know, bunch of zombies in the room instructed on throttling by White. The game science version goes into some very descriptive detail, which is just a real hoot to read. So I wouldn't say that there's a huge difference between the two versions, but game science expands on what is in the original one.
Right, right. Gives you a little more meat, but I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I like the original that you can do it as, you know, the one sentence.
Right.
You have to figure it out yourself. That's why I don't like later edition modules when they, like, tell you everything. I mean, I know you don't have to follow it exactly, but I hate that. I hate having to read something being long and just the one sentence, and then boom, let the players move from there. That's how I like it.
Okay, that'll be a downside for you then. Okay.
Yeah, the game science one is probably a downside for me.
Okay.
If you've got access to both of them, I would recommend running the Judges Guild one, but reading through the game science one.
And just for ideas.
And taking any of the room descriptions that you like, because there are some that are great in there.
Yeah,
but on the whole, I agree with Vince. I like having that flexibility as a DM.
It gives you more role-play opportunity in that way, I think.
That's true. Yeah. And another thing about this module, it is so packed. It kind of reminds me a little bit of a junior version of the Temple of Elemental Evil. Another module I wouldn't use whole all the time, but I could take bits out of it. You know, just read it for inspiration or take like, ooh, that's a neat room. Let's put this in my dungeon. Because I'm of the opinion that most dungeons should not be fully stocked, you know, with a happening in every room.
Oh, yeah. In Brown Book D&D, it was generally listed in Underground and Wilderness Adventures that around 60% of the rooms in any dungeon should be empty.
Yeah, or not just empty, but I mean maybe have something in there that give you clues about it or something.
Mm.
Just something interesting, not something to fight, not something to steal.
Yeah.
You know, but like stuff like this, you can go, oh, I like these three rooms. I think I'm going to work it into my dungeon or something like that, or my world.
Okay.
But, you know, like Halloween, you could do the whole thing. Anyway.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, one of the Halloweens a few years ago, I ran Tegel Manor for the gaming group.
Uh-huh.
That was the one where they tried to go in the tower.
Yeah, okay.
Yay us.
Yay you.
Yeah, the lich looked like Doctor Who and killed Liz's character.
It was so unfair. Anyway, here's an interesting question. Based on how large Tegel Manor is, would you say that the Tegel Manor module was one of the first mega dungeons?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of people call it.
Yeah, it's definitely got a mega dungeon feel, with the caveat that there are no hard and fast levels.
That's right.
But barring that, yeah.
If you look at most Judges Guild supplements and modules and things like that, you're going to find that they rarely give you a level for the for the module or the adventure. You got to kind of figure it out for yourself. I think there's somebody who's trying to do a list on the internet of what modules is what levels. But any DM worth his salt could look through it and go, okay, this is a little too hard for my players, so either I'm going to dumb it down or get something else, or, okay, this looks like a first level thing, you know, that kind of thing. But they never really came out. This is for first and third levels, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a mega dungeon. I mean, this one, I think this one, like, later on begat Dark Tower, Tomb of Horrors, Undermountain, you know, uses right down the line, but I think this was the first one.
Published, certainly.
Yeah, published. You'll never see Castle Greyhawk in its entirety, but yeah, published.
Yeah.
All right, so the original one, rating out of 5 dragons. Liz?
I'll give it a 5 out of 5, despite having been dumb enough to go in via the tower first. It's a great dungeon. There's all kinds of interesting things. You certainly would not look at Tegel Manor and think, oh, this is just like any other abandoned whatever that you could go through. It's not. It's really a class all by itself, I think.
Glenn?
I was going to abstain from the original since I've never seen it. All I have is a Game Science one, but I give it 5. I love. Okay, let me caveat. 3 for everyday use, 5 for special occasion, a la Halloween, things like that.
Mike? Mike?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm thinking.
Oh.
4.5.
4.5.
4.5.
Any reason behind that, or just you're going to go 4.5?
Well, part of it is I hate to go straight 5s. The other is I do think that if Tegel Manor suffers from anything, it has a slight funhouse feel to it.
Yeah.
Which is not bad in small doses. And as a DM, I could certainly work around anything that I feel is inappropriate. But that just keeps it from being perfect to me.
That's too bad. But you've got a point there. It is a little bit funhousey, but it's something you got to watch when you're running, I guess.
I'm going to go 5 out of 5 for a Halloween adventure, definitely.
Uh-huh.
They're running on Halloween, but you know how I don't really like modules itself, so.
Then why are you voting?
Because I'm reviewing it. That's why I'm voting.
Okay, go.
4.5, I'm going to go with Mike. Something's, you know, left to be desired, and I think this is a little bit more that could be done to it and make it less funhousey and more evil.
Well, I'm thinking this is one of those dungeons of its kind that probably needs the least amount of going through and editing by the DM.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot worse.
I just feel like you're running through this place and you hear the doot-doot-doot-doot-doot-doot music in the background or something.
Hey, there's a room that has a ceiling which drips blood.
That's
how
right.
Much more evil can you get than that?
And one filled with slugs that spits purple.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's
well,
right.
That puts an image in your mind you don't want. So we'll go
I on. Will also say another limit is that it is so big that to effectively use it, you've almost got to make it a campaign. Which is fine if that's what you want to do, but it's not going to get cleared in one session or even two or three.
That's true. I have my personal opinion, I have a problem with those kind of campaigns because, you know, after a while it becomes like you're a punch clock hero. Because later on, many years earlier, I got into an Undermountain campaign. It's like by the third session, I'm going, okay, where do we leave off now? Chink, the 5th level, let's go.
I know what you're saying about that.
Yeah,
Liz has that problem too. She gets bored with that sort of dungeon easily.
Yeah, it's you know, same old, same old.
Right. You know, what's in this room?
Yeah, weirdness you can get used to like anything else. You know.
Yeah.
why bother opening that door? I'm just going to get attacked anyway.
Yeah, they're going to turn me and change my sex or turn me into a toad or something like that. I might as well just
here go. I am, brain the size of a plant.
Yeah, that's what we sent Marvin ahead of us. That's it.
All right, so what do we get for an average here now? 4.75, pretty much?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something like...
That's balancing out the game science rewrite.
Good enough.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Not our highest rated, but pretty close.
Pretty close.
Mm. Recommend you pick it up. Pick up a PDF copy by whatever means you can.
That's true. I'd pick up both versions if you can find PDF copies of them, or just you know, compare the two yourself.
Yeah. Go on. Is it available on DriveThruRPG?
Yeah, I'm going to say yeah. I've seen it there at least once.
Okay.
The game science version hard copy you can pick up for not too much at used game stores. Tegel, the original is pricey.
Can be.
Like $100 pricey or?
No. $30, $40, maybe $50 pricey.
Oh.
Yeah.
So if you're a completist or a collection person, that's not that bad, really.
Yeah, no. unless you find that real steal at a used bookstore or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Walk in, oh my God, a player's handbook.
Hey, I've had that happen.
Yeah, I know. All right, so we're going to end this and recommend everyone go out there and pick it up. And tell us what you think by writing in. So I guess it's time to throw the shirt in the backpack, Mike.
I'm going to have Rawr. To find some. I got to find some better music.
No.
Hulk no. smash. You change music, Hulk smash.
No, I want something like, the end of the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Hour or something. You know, that kind of thing. Da, 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 da. We're going now. We're going to be back.
I will point out again, Tune was high on his list.
Okay.
The sad love theme music is our theme to always go out by because we want everybody to be teary-eyed and miss us and want us to come back yet again.
Midas and his friends must... Sorry.
All right. Good night.
You're not
good
sorry.
Luck.
Yeah. All right, fine. I'm not sorry. See, Ma, I can sound intelligent if I want. Goodbye.
Free arc.
Goodbye, everyone.
If you have any comments, please email saveordiepodcast@gmail.com or visit saveordie at saveordie.info. Follow the cast on Facebook / Save or Die Podcast, or follow them on Twitter @TheEvilDM.